Welcome to Greatness, where the world's leading thinkers share their ideas about how to create greatness, great leaders, great teams, and great organizations. Why be good when you can be great? This is Gretchen Gagel, and I am so excited today to welcome Christine Schuhl, the chair of the board of NAWIC Australia, to the Greatness Podcast. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you so much, Gretchen. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, I'm really excited to speak with you. And we haven't spent a great deal of time together, but I've been involved in NAWIC, as we say, NAWIC in the United States, for many decades. And I was just thrilled to hear that it's so active here in Australia upon my move here. But before we get into the organization, I always love asking people how your life journey brought you here. So how did your life journey lead you into construction and a leadership role at NAWIC?
I have to say it was completely accidental, and it was almost a bit of a dare as well. I'm a litigation lawyer by background. I sort of fell into construction law, and I had a construction matter, and I was trying to find out more about my opponent on the other side. And I saw that she was a member of NAWIC. I went, oh, what is this organization? So I Googled it, and I think it was definitely Google back then. I had a read and went, well, that actually sounds really interesting. And I was doing more and more construction work because it just happened to fall across my desk. And I think I just developed a real love for it because I loved the detail and I loved the different people I was meeting. So I wanted to get more of it. I wanted to meet more people. So Jen from New South Wales, they had a NAWIC ACT and a New South Wales combined chapter. I'm like, great. So what are you doing in the ACT? She went, nothing. I went, well, why not? And she said, well, why don't you start something? Go on, I dare you. And she was my position. So I went, fine, I will. And NAWIC in the ACT was born, and I became president of NAWIC in the ACT, and we basically just started looking for women who were in the industry who just wanted to talk to other women who were in the industry. So that was NAWIC's prevailing goal at the time. It was to empower and support women in the industries, and that started off with networking, a lot of informal mentoring, and it really was at the grassroots what we're trying to do, just introduce different women to other women doing what they were, listening to their stories, talking about what their issues were, and then gradually it built up over time. By the time NAWIC now in the ACT is about 12, 14 years old. I've lost track how long it's been, but it's grown from strength to strength, and that has got a lot to do with, I think, the companies who we, our stakeholders, realizing how important it is to actually support the women in their companies, and if they don't have enough women, why, and how can they employ more women in construction?
It's really interesting. So I started out in engineering school in 1982 and started working as an engineering intern in 1983 for a gas utility. And, you know, most of my career was a couple of little detours to the construction industry. And you and I were just talking before we started recording how I left the industry, get off a plane for a while, finish raising my kids, and came back in 7 years later, I think it was 7 years, and thought, wow, we're still having the same conversations that we were having and that we've been having for quite a long time about diversity and inclusion in our industry.
And I think that's right. I mean, NAWIC's, 25 years old in Australia now. And I look back at when I joined, you know, all those years ago, and those conversations, they're shifting. There are more of them, but many of them are still the same. I look at the WGA statistics every year and keep my fingers crossed and hope that, somehow there's going to be a change. But if there is a change, it's minuscule. It's like, 0.01% or something. So, when you look at the gender pay gap for women in construction compared to the national average, in construction, women, the pay gap for women is 21%. That's just... With a national average of 14, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You look at how many women are in construction, 11%. You look at how many women are in top or management or leadership roles across all of the all of the women in construction and all the employees in construction, it's only about 18%. When you start talking about affecting real change, based on a lot of the research that we've looked into, that magic tipping point is at least 30%. I mean, and when women make up 50% of the population, even 30%, that's just enough to start at least that change in culture. And I listened to John's podcast a little bit earlier, and he's absolutely right, and I absolutely applaud what ACA are doing right now, and we're hoping to provide some commentary on the report they're doing in relation to cultural change, particularly in relation to women, because no matter who we talk to, and I have got I'm in a very unique position in that being a national board and being the chair of the national board, I get to see what is happening across the country, and I get to hear the stories about what's happening across the country, and the stories are still diabolical. And when you look at the women we represent, so we represent women from, you know, from trades, project managers, architecture, engineers, right through to, you know, potentially, you know, women who manage to sit in the magic C-suite. And the stories are still very similar. It doesn't matter whether you're a woman on the tools or you're a female project manager or you're an engineer, the stories are still very much the same in relation to the culture that's prevalent in the industry.
Let's talk about those stories. And you're speaking of John Davies, who's the CEO, president, managing director of the Australian Constructors Association, which I have a great deal of respect for him because he is one of those change agents. That's how I describe myself. And that's why I reached out to you, right? How we affect change. But I think what is interesting, and I love construction. I mean, I deeply love construction. When I came back into it, my girlfriends were like, "Why construction? Really?" They'd forgotten that I used to be in construction, right? But we build and maintain the societies of the assets of society. We are the constructors of that, and we have great people. We have wonderful people, but we've got a couple of these little challenges around collaboration, trust, diversity, and inclusion. That if we overcome them, we could be such a better industry. But I don't think that most people understand these stories. So could you share a couple of stories that you have heard about that kind of speak to what the challenge is?
Oh, look, I think as recently as just a few months ago, we had a member reach out to us who had started with a company, and it was just about they're just about to go into lockdown. So the company went around and asked all the, you know, all the employees, look, what can we do for you to make it easier now that we're going into lockdown? And one of the women said, well, actually, my daycare is closing, so if I can leave half an hour earlier to pick up my child and work the rest of the hours from home, that'd be great. And because she was on probation, she was asked to pack up and leave by the end of the week. And I went, you've got to be kidding me. That then it was 2020. How is that even possible? So that was one example. Another example of a woman working on a construction site, and you know, she'd made all the arrangements for daycare and dropping off her kids and picking them up and all that kind of stuff. The guys thought it'd be really funny to lock her in the toilets. So she was late for pickup of her kids from daycare because, you know, that's what you do to, you know, to newbies on site. And then when she, I think she changed her times, and they changed the starting times to half an hour earlier. So as you can imagine, you know, construction sites start fairly early, but daycare centres don't necessarily open that early either.
Yeah.
So she couldn't continue working there because the conditions made it impossible for her to work there. That's just a few examples. That's just off the top of my head. We have, you know, scores of them.
Well, and the interesting part is what's good for women is good for everybody. I run a women's leadership program for the Australian Pipelines and Gas Association. They are tackling this issue head on. And they said, what do we do? And I said, well, how about we start a women's leadership program? They've actually increased female membership, I think, from 19 to 23% in 2 years. And 74 women have gone through this program. But we brought in a guest speaker, retired from the mining industry. And she told a story of working to affect a certain change. I won't go into details about it. But one of the guys in the mine, this was decades ago, came up to her and said, I couldn't really say anything because I'm one of the guys, but I really appreciate the change that you just made. And so, you know, men are struggling with these issues alongside women.
Of course they are. And I think that's the issue we see. Like a lot of people, a lot of stakeholders I've spoken to said, oh, well, you know, it's just, you know, it's all about women. You know, a lot of people are suffering in the industry. I said, yes, they are. But you need to actually start asking why. Because also what's good for women is also good for men in the industry. Yep. And this is something that seems to be, or at least this is the leading line I've used a lot often, because that seems to be what gets some attention. If you look at the suicide rates in the construction industry, they're out of the box. It's just ridiculous how high the numbers are. And there is evidence, there's research that's been done. As you introduce more women into the workplace, the culture will change. And that culture includes making it actually easier for men to leave early or to make sure that they can be home, to see their kids, introducing 5-day working weeks instead of 6-day working weeks. Now, there's a female CEO in Sydney who's championing that change. And she's done it. She's actually done it on a construction site in Sydney. Yeah. And again, it's a public site. So one of the things that NAHWC's been banging on about is that the government really does need to actually step into this fray, given they're the biggest client of a lot of the construction work that's around the country at the moment, that those sorts of decisions where, you have a CEO of a large construction company going to the government saying, right, well, we have a 5-day working week. That's probably going to cost you a bit more, but you are going to save a number of lives because the working conditions would be much better than a 6-day working week where, there are a whole bunch of dads, because it's not as many mums, dads who are missing out on raising their children on a weekend because they have to work that day. You will increase mental health by doing that one simple thing. And, the New South Wales government took it on as a challenge. Now, why can't that be across the board? So what's good for women is also good for men.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, it's interesting. I was with a team in, not here in Melbourne, another city in Australia. I'll do everything I can to hide who this team is. And one of the co-leaders showed up late to one of our meetings, and there was this gnashing of teeth, a male. And I talked to him afterwards, but I said to the team, I said, do you know that he's divorced and he has his children every other week, and he has to take them to school in the morning? And they had absolutely no idea that was going on. It's not just a female problem. It is a family problem. I know in the United States, 70% of moms work, and it puts pressure on both the working moms and the working dads.
Oh, that's exactly right. And I think that when you start looking at it as that being a uniquely female problem and look at it being a cultural problem in the industry, and I know that NAHWC specifically addresses the cultural issues as it relates to women, but when you start addressing all the cultural issues that exist, so that presenteeism and that blokiness of having to keep working until you fall over and no, there's no such thing as sick days, or no, I can't possibly be the one who's seen to be taking paternal leave. Once you start breaking down that culture, it is better for everyone. Yep. Look, a lot of those permissions are given to women first, or if they're not given to women, the women are criticised. But if it was just made the norm, then the industry would benefit as a whole. I think, that's how you're going to retain more women in construction as well. When women have to stop actually fighting for what I would call, basic basic rights, and it just becomes the normal part of the conversation, it will vastly improve the industry, because you will attract and retain more women. And I know I'm quoting Wajir again, but they've literally just published a report that says if you have more women in leadership positions, your profits will go up. So if there's no other argument other than, cold hard cash, that has to be one that somebody has to start listening to. Your profits will go up if you have more women in leadership positions. It has been proven. The research has been done. Mm-hmm. That's what I find incredible. So, and this is where I look at the International Women's Day themes for this year. The UN Women's is the women focusing on women in leadership, especially post, COVID and economic reform. And then there's the International Women's Day org, which is Choose to Challenge. The two of those sit beautifully together, because the focus has to be on increasing women in leadership positions. And that's not just the C-suite in large companies. That's across the board. That's across politics. That's across businesses. That's across any place where decisions are being made. There need to be women.
Yeah.
And that's one of the key policies that NAHWC's focusing on this year, particularly this quarter with International Women's Day.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, the interesting part is that having been now in Australia for, coming on 3 years in September, it's interesting that the Associated General Contractors in the United States has just started something called the Culture of Care that they're having organizations sign on to. And I've just joined the Construction Industry Culture Task Force here in Australia. So maybe we are getting to some kind of a tipping point where we're at the point of making real change happen. And that's what I love about your organization, you know, this vision, an equitable construction industry where women fully participate. It sounds like such a simple thing to say, right? But I love the different pillars of what you all are focused upon. So tell us a little bit about the priorities within that overarching vision of women fully participating in the construction industry.
I think it's the one thing I talk about a lot is that women are 50% of the population, yet infrastructure is being constructed for women to use without women's input. And there's a classic, you know, classic examples of just looking around the built environment, some cities, and you just know there's no way a woman was involved in the design team in how transport is linked with facilities, or how places are lit after dark, or you know how women get home from from school. It's phenomenal that just does not seem to be a consideration until somebody actually hires a woman and who turns their mind to what that might look like. I think by increasing women in those leadership positions, there's going to be somebody at the table who sits there and reminds everybody what the other half of the population may or may not need. And I know that the first three elements or the first key policies for us are about increasing women in leadership positions. To me, that's just a no-brainer. That's, yes, it just has to happen. How we do that, that's what we're talking to government and our stakeholders about. The focus on education is another one, and then putting gender on the tender. In relation to education, there are some really simple programs being started at the grassroots level. So here in the ACT, for example, NAWIC actually won a grant from the ACT government to work on a curriculum for schools here to actually start introducing more discussions about a career in construction. There's also a pathways program that NAWIC's running and hoping to roll out nationally. But in the ACT at the moment, they are literally partnering with the ACT government and training corporations to teach girls in year 11 and 12 a trade. So they come out with a trade when they finish high school. Now that requires a lot of cooperation from a lot of different moving parts. But when I get the, when I have the discussion about putting gender on the tender and making government responsible for why don't you put, 30% female participation on construction projects of a certain value. And the cry that I normally hear is, well, that's all very nice, but you're just setting us up for failure because we don't have a pipeline of women coming to construction. And that's when I say, why do you think that is? So NAWIC's trying to tackle all the problems from very different, lots of different angles. So the focus on education is just one of them. You want a pipeline? Here's your pipeline. but then there are plenty of women who are studying, engineering, and there are plenty of women who are studying, construction degrees as well. They just don't stay. And that is the question you have to ask. Why?
Yeah. I just have a million things running through my head. The creativity. I love when you, there's an organization in the US, the ABC, and they did a really interesting thing. I want to say it was in Arkansas, where they went and did mother-daughter recruiting for girls in high school who had single low-income mothers. And they recruited the moms and the daughters into the trades together because they figured with that support system, the buddy system, so you're lifting women out of poverty and you're giving their daughters a pipeline to financial success. And I thought, wow, that's really creative.
And I think if you're looking at the post-COVID environment where a disproportionate number of women lost their jobs as a result of COVID, and I just look at all the money that's been splashed in the budget on infrastructure projects, and there was a huge outcry from a lot of women's organisations about how so much of that money could have been used for, daycare or providing, daycare for free or making it easy for working mothers. But I sort of tried to defend the industry in that, or defend how much money was going to the industry, saying, yeah, but this is a great opportunity for the government to siphon off some of that money that's going into building our roads and our bridges and our hospitals and our schools and ensure that, women who have been displaced as a result of COVID are retrained. You think of the number of skills that women who have been out of work, either in the airline industry or the hospitality industry, those skills are so easily transferable into so many jobs in the industry. I think people think that construction is just either you're an engineer or you're on the tools and that's it. And there are so many different careers that could be happening in construction for anyone and women. But silence was a stern reply, and I think that's what's annoyed me the most about what's come out of the last budget and what I probably can't let go. I'm like a dog with a bone when it comes to that one, that the focus or the generation for this cultural change and supporting women has to come from government. Look, the industry is doing what they can in a lot of time, but that issue of, well, if they're not made to do it sometimes, they won't. And I think when I was listening to John Davies' comment, I agree 200% in relation to the Commonwealth having to step up and start directing how some of that money that they're giving to the states and territory is spent, particularly in relation to how it is spent on women in construction.
Mm-hmm. It can be done. So I was just checking this LinkedIn posting that I saw. A good friend of mine, Maya Rosenquist, she heads up a significant division for Mortenson, which is a very large principal contractor in the United States. And I love her posts. She just posted on LinkedIn that they have a job site with 30% female participation in the trades for their self-perform work.
Wow.
And obviously, as a principal contractor, they control much more their self-perform workforce than they do the trades that are working for them, but they're at 30%. And so, you know, like you said, when people say it can't be done, well, there's no pipeline. Well, great. What are we doing to, and it's not just women. It's also about diversity in the United States. And I think that's an issue here as well. I gave a speech to the Mechanical Contractors Association board a few years ago, and they said they were complaining they couldn't get enough Latino tradespeople. And this one guy in the room said, you know what, we started advertising on Latino radio, Spanish speaking radio, and it quadrupled our applications from that pool. And if we're not pulling from every pool the most talented people, we're not going to be able to make the work happen, especially with the infrastructure agenda here in Australia.
Correct. I keep hearing about skill shortages and the complaints about how a lot of the skills, especially the ones that went to the mining industry. And my comment is always, you are just not looking in the right place. Mm-hmm. There are so many women out there who would love to get involved. Darwick ran we run a research program through an International Women's Day scholarship. At the moment, we only have the one. It's $20,000 a year. It's normally announced around about International Women's Day, but one of the research papers was around, well, why aren't high school girls choosing construction as a career? And she went out and interviewed a whole lot of high school students, and it was everything from, well, you know, mum pays private school fees, there's no way they would allow me to, a career in construction. So, parents have got a lot to answer for, but a lot of them were prescient enough to understand that, well, I look at the industry, I look at who's working there, and I don't see anyone who looks like me. Mm. So why would I voluntarily walk into, the lion's den, somebody described it as. And I went, well, fair enough. And there are enough companies who are actually trying to do the right thing. And some advice I was given a little while ago was, look, maybe you need to stop talking about what people aren't doing or, what's bad, and maybe highlight those companies who are doing the right thing, which is what I've been trying to do as well, because there are plenty of companies out there who are trying to do the right thing. But when I see headlines, from, certain governments who remain, unnamed, congratulating themselves for doubling the number of, women in trades from 1% to 2%, you just go, okay, that's just slightly, that's tone deaf. You don't get it. Yeah. Well, the jump from 1% to 2% is not enough.
Well, and that's why I lifted up that story of Maya. I mean, they are at 30%, or this contractor thinking creatively. I think that rolling our sleeves up and saying, I was speaking at the Western Energy Institute's Women in Leadership Conference, so lots of gas utility women, and they had a panel of men. One of them was actually a client of mine at the time, Craig Wagstaff, their CEO, and he said, I've told my HR people, I do not want 10% of our engineering candidates to be female. It needs to be equal. I don't care what you need to do. I don't care what, what universities you need to meet with or what, but that's the goal, and putting the pressure to people to really achieve those numbers. So what can we do? You and I could talk about this for hours and hours. I'm confident of that. But as we wrap up this podcast, what can listeners out there do? Like, what can we do to affect change, to create a more inclusive industry, to attract more women to our industry and keep those women in our industry?
I think they need to be receptive to the fact that the industry has been a very rigid one for a very long time, and it's time to actually look at things differently. And that is to invite more women into their boardrooms. It's to invite more women into their leadership positions and start listening. Because without that change at the top, it's never going to happen. And look, and I absolutely take my hat off to those men in leadership positions who are affecting that change, because at the moment it is only men in those positions and it has to come from the top. But I think those decisions will be easier made if government also makes it increasingly difficult to work or contract with government if they do not have a plan for attracting and retaining more women into the industry. So women are doing what they can at all the various levels. It has to come from the top.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, it's also what we did with safety. Until the people buying the engineering and construction services said, you're not going to be able to work on our job unless you have a certain safety record. I think that's what really turned the tide on safety decades ago. And I would agree with you. I sit on the board of a principal contractor in the United States, and they created this board after they sold to their employees, became an ESOP, employee-owned organization. And when the recruiter called me, I was recommended by a mentor to potentially be their first outside director for a principal contractor. My first question of him was, did you tell him I'm a woman? Because that's not normally, you know, the person that they bring on as their first outside director. So great advice. Love the vision of NAWIC. Amazing work. Christine, they're so fortunate to have you as chair of the board. Thank you so much for coming today to the Greatness Podcast and sharing a little bit about what the organization's up to shift the culture.
Well, thank you too, Gretchen. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Interested in hearing more? Visit us at greatnessconsulting.com. Thank you.